Hey there, and welcome to the Dynamics Hot Dish Podcast, serving up stories and knowledge on Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform. This is what's hot in Dynamics. You're now joining your hosts, Ashley Steiner and Merlin Schweiger.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for jumping on and joining us again today. We are really excited to have a guest again with us. So we've had one guest so far this season, and really excited always when we get people on here to join us. So wanted to say welcome to you, Asif Rahmani, who is, I would say, the master of user adoption, knows a lot about it, and hopefully can help solve all of the problems that we face with it. Officially, he is the CEO at Visual SP, and we're excited to hear more from you about that. So Asif, would you like to introduce yourself and tell our listeners more about you?
Sure. First, thanks so much for having me, Ashley, Merlin. I really appreciate it. I've seen your other episodes on, you know, releases that are happening in Dynamics and Dataverse and the stuff that you're doing with Doug and everything else. And I got to say, it's a pretty fantastic podcast. So please keep it up. Thanks so much
for doing this
for community. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah. So my name is Asif Rahmani, as Ashley mentioned, and I'm the CEO of Visual SP, but I like the other title even better, the Master of User Adoption. I personally have been in this particular niche of focusing on user adoption for the last, I would say, about a decade. Not because I'm that young, you know, my white hair gives it away, I'm not. The reason is because before the user adoption thing, I was one of these other people who thought everything just works out magically. When you build stuff, people just use it.
build it and they will come.
Yeah, I was very naive before that, where I used to be a trainer, used to be a consultant, used to be a lot of different hats. I never thought about the users, unfortunately. Once I started thinking about the users and I dug deeper and deeper inside, there was no way out, because without the users, the end users, as we were talking about before we started the podcast here, but without them, there is no success. No matter what you build, it's just going to be this shiny thing up in the sky that no one cares about. So what's the point? So that's what I focus on as an individual, and that's what we focus on as a company as well.
I think that's such an interesting and important take is you could build the greatest tool, but if you don't think about how people are going to use it or how it's going to make their lives better, easier, then you could spend all this time and money on something awesome and nobody uses it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So before we jump into talking about Visual SP and the awesome tool that you guys have, I would love to hear more about you're an MVP as well. So would love to hear about your journey. I know you're an MVP on the SharePoint side, right?
Officially office servers now? Office servers and services is the official area, but under the covers is Microsoft 365, which includes SharePoint, Teams, Yammer, and everything else. That's right. So as both of you know, I've been doing the MVP stuff for quite a long time. The best question that I receive, and you both, I'm sure, are aware of this also, is how much do you get paid as being a Microsoft MVP?
I haven't been asked that yet, but nope. I can't wait to share the answer that you give.
$1 million. Just kidding.
I'm waiting for that to come in the mail, I guess.
Yeah. No, we get paid nothing. In fact, I was talking about this in my last session that, honestly, guys, the answer is it's negative. That's the truth, because when you go to the MVP summit or when you're doing community activities, sometimes you're taking money out of your pocket to pay for the expenses, actually many times. So, of course, then the question becomes, why do you do it? What's the point if it's a negative return? Well, I think that's the wrong way of looking at it, in my opinion. It's not a negative return. It is negative cash. The return is definitely positive, and the return comes in the form of trust from people who see that you have the designation and know that you know what you're talking about. You know that, you know, they know that you've been helping people along the way for many years. Because at the end of the day, it's not a Microsoft Certified Trainer MCT or Microsoft Certified Solution Developer MCSD or MCSE or things like that. This designation does not come from a test that you take or some other, you know, thing that you prove. Now, I have done the MCT. I was an MCT before for many years, and before that I was an MCSD for many years. And those things were hard to get, but there was a very definite process to get there. With MVP, when I first got my MVP, which was back in 2007, and knock on wood, it's been continuing since 2007, it was very much of a designation that Microsoft says, you know, we see what you are doing, Asif. You're already starting to present at conferences. That's what I was doing at that time. I was doing lots and lots of videos on YouTube. I still have lots of videos out there answering questions in forums and teaching classes, doing lots of free SharePoint Saturdays back in the day. And the nomination happened automatically. The designation happened automatically because of that community contribution that you do. Having said that, you, both of you know, and I know, and everybody listening to, I'm sure, would know also that there are pretty awesome people out there who are not MVPs, and they, maybe they should be. But having said that, the main thing that gets you the designation is not knowing, it's sharing, right? How much do you share? How much do you contribute? How much do you mentor? How much do you lead others in that? So I've been blessed. I do a lot of these things that, like I said, conferences, forums, YouTube, nominating others as MVPs if I see someone who is worthy of that designation, webinars. I've written books in the past. And that's how I got it, and I kept on, you know, keeping the MVP designation, and hope Microsoft continues it.
And I think that that's, well, first of all, we have, there is somebody here that is very involved in the community and has not received that designation. So I think that that is important also to point out that there are people who provide value. Now, whether or not that status changes soon, we will find out.
Who can say?
But I think that, you know, one of the important things that I learned as part of the MVP program was it's not going to feel like work, and it's not going to be hard if you just do what you love, right? I remember the people who helped me when I started. You know, it's been about a decade or so since I've been in the industry, and I remember exactly who those people were that mentored me and provided me knowledge and information and training. And I just want to be able to provide that back to people because I appreciated it so much. And so, you know, one of the best advice I ever got, it was from Jason Latimer, actually, was you won't notice, like, you'll get your MVP when you're not trying, when you're just doing the things that you love to do and you're giving back in the way that you want to, that's when you'll get it. And then that's true, because I tried really hard a few years ago, and it didn't happen. And then I was just like, all right, well, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And then sure enough. So anyways, I think that that's a good story about it's not what you know. It's about sharing what you know with people. So thank you for sharing that story.
Absolutely. And speaking of Merlin also, I'm sure he will. He has to. And I've seen it. Seeing the content that he puts out, this podcast also. We were talking about this at a conference a few weeks ago, right, Merlin, when we saw each other in person. It just has to happen. You know, you're doing all the right things. So,
well,
I'm sure it is going
now,
to.
Now that I've been nominated, I just have to finish the application. So,
yeah,
wonderful. Best wishes.
Thanks.
So after that, we'd love to hear going back to your title that I gave you on this, that I think that you should put on your business cards, the master of user adoption. So companies you mentioned tend to overlook this, and this is where they fail. You know, why does that happen?
Yeah, it's funny. And Microsoft might not like me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Some vendors, such as Microsoft, feel that, well, our application just works. It's super easy. Just like a phone, you pick it up and you start using it. And, sorry, Microsoft, it's not. Okay, that's just a reality. And that's not just Microsoft, it's IBM, it's SAP, it's SuccessFactors, ServiceNow. Everything has nuances, and everything has lots of customizations that happen before the user sees it. And who is the end user anyway? We got to think about that. These are accountants and lawyers and paralegal and dentist doctors, office workers of all sorts. And these people want to get their job done. You know, they could care less about the actual tool that helps them get this job done. Just any tool will do. Let me get my job done and get that satisfaction that I get. So having said that, at the end of the day, if a tool or a process or a person or a combination of those things help with that ultimate goal, then you get user adoption. It's pretty simple. right? When iPhone first came out, I still remember 2007, you know, when it was coming out, many, many people were like, oh, this is just another big screen thing. It doesn't even have buttons like BlackBerry does and so forth. I still remember back in 2000, I got something called a Compaq iPack. I don't know if you guys remember this at all, but Compaq iPack was also a big screen version, kind of like iPhone, with one button at the bottom. And I'm like, wow, this seems very similar, you know, 6 years later or 7 years later. Is this going to succeed? Of course, we all know where the industry is now, where iPhone is and other copycats that have done similar things. But why did that happen? It happened because things just became simple. Things became intuitive, and people just picked it up. Kids pick up iPhones and iPods, and they'll be able to figure it out within minutes, right? So we should all strive for making our systems easier and easier and easier. Having said that, it is such a problem still because we're not looking at one vendor. So we're talking about Apple in that sense, right? In this case, when a user, let's take a person who's using Dynamics, a Dynamics user, that user, chances are, is going to be using multiple applications to do his or her job. So you got, let's say, Dynamics Sales, if it's a salesperson, also has Workday for HR stuff, has ServiceNow maybe to open up tickets, has SharePoint where their intranet is, has Teams for meetings and chats and stuff like that, maybe Planner they're using for some planning. And this is just a start. There's so many more custom applications. So when a person goes from one to the other application, there's no consistency. It's just true because there's different vendors who are making these things. And that person, especially if they're in a hybrid situation where they're working from home or working from office or doing both or whatever, it's not as simple anymore where we can just tap Susie and say, hey, Susie, I can't figure this out. Could you just come to my desk and help me with this? Susie's not there. You're at your home or you're in the office of one of the few people there. And that's a very common thing these days. So that's where I dig in deeper and deeper also to help people understand what the current realities are and what the realities will remain in the future, just like that. And how can we help these users to get their job done? Because we're talking about more than technology. We're talking about true frustration that people can take with them home and other places if they're not really catered to. That inclusiveness, that diversity that we talk about starts with helping them with their job, getting that satisfaction, getting that seamless way to accomplish their goals, right? So all this stuff is related. Sorry, I'm going on and on about these things, but I'm pretty passionate about this subject area. I think me being a former technologist, I like to say former technologist because now I feel like I'm a psychologist with the end user things that I do. I think it's very important for all technologists to understand that just because you're allowed a system that looks good and acts good for you doesn't mean you're going to get the adoption that you're looking for. The WIIFM factor, the what's in it for me, is super important that we should all tap into.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you said there that kind of scared me was that if Microsoft ever does become as easy as an iPhone to use, well, in my opinion, I know Marlon, you have an Android, but I think iPhones are really easy. Probably overly easy, then we're all out of jobs, right? I have a job because Microsoft, you know, threw out a solution that wasn't fully, I don't want to say fully baked, but not as simple. So that being said, though, I mean, it's so true. I mean, people have so many systems that they work on. How can they become a master of all?
It's interesting, though, Ashley, that you say you'd be out of a job, because I would say you would still have a job, and it would actually be doing the thing that all of your customers think is your job, but is actually only half of your job. Like, I've seen this a lot, like, being at a partner for years and years and years and years and years, especially, like, on the sales side. Like, when you go in and you try to sell, like, a Dynamics implementation, your expectation as the partner is, I am selling you functionality. And the customer's expectation is also, you are selling me a system that does, you know, these 10 things. Like, look at any RFP that's ever been sent out in the history of software sales. And every single one of them is, can it do this? Can it do this? Can it do this? Which I think there's a whole separate episode where I rant about how much I hate RFPs. But nonetheless, the RFP process is all about, I needed to do these 500 things. Mm-hmm. And so customers are like, well, I'm buying functionality. Partners are like, I'm implementing functionality. And then lost in the middle is anybody going to use this functionality? Do they know how to use it? Does it actually help them do their job? Are they going to look at it as just, well, my boss wants me to put in this data about my sales pipeline, but that's the only thing that I use it for is once a month. I log into the system, update my estimated close dates and estimated revenues, and then I'm out until next month before my monthly review. Like, I feel like that happens so often because nobody thinks about, is the user actually going to use this? They just assume that if I put this software in front of them and tell them to use it, that they will use it because I have told them to do so.
I agree.
So how does Visual SP jump into that then? Like, so, you know, you guys have an awesome tool. I know I can say that because I've seen it. I use it actually.
Awesome.
So tell us, so how does Visual SP bridge that gap in, you know, the expectation versus reality of the end user?
Yeah. For that, I'm going to tell you a little story. Okay. You ready?
Awesome.
Oh, good.
I'm ready.
So I used to be a trainer myself. I'm not actively training, doing multi-day classes like I used to anymore, but I still train and teach at conferences and stuff like that. But when I was a trainer, people started telling me that, hey, you need to have something for our users. So you're teaching us things as power users, as developers and administrators, but what about our users? They're not listening to us, and they're just doing whatever they want, and they're just doing the wrong things the wrong way. They're doing things, but they're just doing it the wrong way. So that's when we started thinking, all right, how can we help these users? I was making lots of videos at that time for power users and designers and stuff like that. So then I started making videos for end users. How do you make a site? This was about SharePoint stuff. How do you set up security? Things like that. Those videos were 10, 15 minutes each. And people said, oh, that's great content, but it's too long. It's got to be short. Like, all right, well, let's make it shorter. So we made it 5 minutes, 3 minutes. Then additional feedback came saying, okay, content is good, wonderful, but how do we get people to these videos? Because it's sitting in our wiki library or our intranet. But people are still asking the same questions, exact same thing. How, you know, I can't share this document. Help me share this thing. Same regular stuff. So then we wondered, how do we take the learning to the learner as opposed to the learner to the learning, right? That's when we had that eureka moment. And this is long, long time ago when we came out with our product officially in 2012 for SharePoint on-premises first. And that's when we took the interface and looked, all right, where in the interface can we make it super intuitive for the user so when they are struggling, they can go to help or they can click on, you know, something that they realize that was going to help them. So at that time, we put up a help tab. The SharePoint interface had tabs, so we put up a tab. Then, of course, we gradually started changing more and more, and now we support not just SharePoint, but Dynamics and all Microsoft 365 and any other web application. But the idea still remained the same. How do you bring the learning to the learner? We went a bit beyond that also, saying, how do you bring any information to the user? So what Visual SP does, and thank you very much for your vote of confidence, appreciate that. Visual SP strives to bring any information that the user needs at their moment of need in context of their own environment and within the flow of their work. So those are the three pillars that we work on. Once again, at the moment of their need in context of their environment and in the flow of their work. So you're minimizing the context switching as much as possible, right? I'm here, give me help here. Don't tell me to go there. That there doesn't work. There's even a proven methodology saying that if it's more than two clicks or more than 10 seconds, you have lost a user. You know, 9 times out of 10, you've lost a user. So how do you keep things within two clicks, within 10 seconds to give them the answer? So that's, in a nutshell, what we focus on as a company, to bring an overlay directly on top of any web interface, whether you're in ServiceNow and Salesforce or Microsoft 365, SharePoint, Teams, Dynamics. You have the overlay right there where it's kind of like an I'm going to throw an analogy here, like a HoloLens. If anybody has tried a HoloLens, they know that when you put it on, it's like your world changes and you got an overlay. Oh, wow. Okay, click here to do this, click here to do that. That's what we do. We make that overlay on top of these applications. So for the user, it becomes super easy to know, no matter which application they're in, what is the right thing to do, what is the best practices, what is a good policy, what is a guideline they should follow, how to do certain things, and so forth. So sorry for the long explanation, but once again, I'm pretty passionate about this thing as well. That's what we do as a company, and that's what I do as an individual.
I'm actually thinking about, it as like a, if you're playing a video game that's like, you know, one of those like character running around the world, so it's a video game, mm-hmm. So you like walk up to a door, and then it's like, you know, push this button to open the door. That's sort of what I'm imagining. It's like visual SP popping up and being like, you can do this here, you can do that there. Loot this treasure chest, I don't know.
I like it.
Yeah, if only Dynamics was like as fun as a video game, right?
Yes.
Or other tools. So I guess that's my question is, you know, obviously I have used it personally on the Dynamics 365, you know, in sales, customer service, marketing, first party apps. You obviously started in SharePoint, but you listed a whole bunch of other non-Microsoft tools. I mean, can you use this on any sort of application software? Do you have a list where people can go find out where they can use it?
Sure, yeah. Once anybody starts their journey at visualsp.com, in the FAQ section, we list out many, many tools that we currently support. Having said that, from the ones that I mentioned, which I'll mention again, we have not encountered many web applications that we cannot support. So many of our users are using this on their custom homegrown web applications, no problem, an HR application, a payroll application, expense reimbursement, acquisition. But then as far as the software as a service, SaaS applications, you know, of course we have the Dynamics, Microsoft 365, but then after that, Salesforce, ServiceNow, SuccessFactors, VivaVault. I'm going to run out of names quickly here, but it's a Workday. Any kind of web application, you can put this overlay on top of to help your users. Because why do you want to limit them anyway? It should be a consistent help platform wherever they go. And that's what we try to accomplish for our customers.
Yeah, and I'll say just from my experience having used it, and we'll include also some notes like how people can do, you know, the demo version and how to reach out to you and things like that. But the coolest things that I've noticed is, one, it comes with some pre-populated content, right? I think that that's the scariest part about any sort of training documentation is, okay, cool, we want to provide it, but there's nothing here, and having to build all of it is kind of scary. So you can even try it out and there's some information already pre-built into it. And then you can obviously add to it based on, you know, specific processes that are unique to the company. And add to it that way. The other thing that I really liked is it doesn't have any sort of lag on the system. Asif, you and I had talked previously about competitors to Visual SP. WalkMe, I'll throw it out there. I mean, we were very open and honest on this podcast. So WalkMe is a tool that I had used at a previous organization, but Microsoft actually ended up forcing us to take it out because it was slowing down our system so much. That they were like, you know, because it's having to load certain things on the back end, and we were even online, so Microsoft was like, you know, we can't help your system unless you rip out WalkMe. And I tell that to everybody now that asks about it, and I have seen zero lag or any sort of issues with Visual SP, which was what my first thing was. Well, if it's going to slow it down for users, then you obviously can't have it. So if there's any sort of concern about, you know, issues with load times or things like that, for me, it seems to be running as expected, which is huge, to be honest, because anytime you overlay something on Dynamics, I think the biggest concern people have is how is it going to impact. Well, salespeople are just so impatient, right? Like, so this is not going to load in 5 seconds, you know. So I wanted to share those were the two big things that I took away from it that were just game changers. Pretty huge for me, especially coming from the admin side.
Right. I think those things are super important, or should be super important for everybody. You know, the two main things you mentioned, Ashley, one is the performance of the actual system cannot go down. Because if it does, then, hey, I can't do something. What good is the help for that thing? It's just not helpful. Right. yes, we work hard to make sure that there is no lag. Second thing, as you mentioned also in the beginning, that people come to us all the time saying, you know what, I would love to do something like this, but I don't have the time to create all this content and manage everything. And our biggest, one of the biggest value propositions, I should say, is that we help you with a lot of default starter content that you don't have to manage. And I'll give you some examples also. So how do I drill down in charts within Dynamics? Now, giving some exact visuals of that. And we do that in forms of videos and animated images, images, text content, whatever makes the most sense, or even walkthroughs. Or how do I pin a view? And how do I pin it so it's always there, make it a default view? What is the difference between leads versus contacts? How do I create an activity in sales or customer service and things like that? Those are common things, doesn't matter how much customization you do. So those things, why should we have the admin worry about? We'll worry about it as a company. We'll worry about it. We'll give it to you. You have to worry about additional things that you want to convey to your users. For example, what is your organizational resource that you want to give them? What is your sales playbook? How do people get to your help desk content or help desk itself? Those kinds of things we let you customize in the system, so you can put, let's say, 5% of content, yours, and 95% of the content, or at least a big bulk of the content, we can worry about ourselves. Of course, the percentages vary depending on which customer it is, but we help as much as possible to take on the burden of the content and other kind of configurations, so you don't have to. We'll have to get you set up also, Merlin, so you can start evaluating, see if you like it or not.
I feel like the odd man out here. I use the tool.
I guess my next question is, like, what's your roadmap? Are there any cool, exciting things coming for Visual SP and the tool that you guys have?
The content story that we talked about, that's going to be expanded even more. Nice. We will be creating additional content for additional applications that people are asking us about. So that's definitely going to happen. The experience itself, we are always striving to make it easier. So less clicks within our own system to make your content. Because, nice. We shouldn't have you worrying about, okay, well, I got to worry about another system. No. We want you to worry about this as less as possible, less clicks as possible, even within our system. So that's something that's on our roadmap as well.
Nice.
And quite honestly, at the end of the day, we're looking for ways to minimize and simplify things instead of expand into a product that does too many things or tries to do too many things. Because I don't want to mention our competitors, but you mentioned one of them already. Some of these competitors try to do a lot. And when you do a lot, there's many, many different points of failure. We try to minimize that. We try to make things, the footprint itself, as we talked about, minimal. The application itself, making it so it's minimally invasive. And it's more helpful as possible. So I'll give an example. I'm coming to a system or to a page for the first time, and I'm an end user. And I see something pop up in the side instead of blocking my progress, but it's still intuitive enough and it's still visible enough that it helps me with what I needed anyway. So how do you get to those, what we call contextual experiences, where they're minimally invasive and maximally beneficial? That's what we're trying to do as much as possible in our product, instead of trying to smash up too many features inside it.
I appreciate that you're focusing on what you are good at, right? You're like, this is the space that we fill, and this is what we know we can help with, so we're going to make that experience as great as possible. Because you're right, there are too many companies out there that are like, hey, this is going well, let's try this and this and this, yeah. And then they don't become great at any one thing. So I appreciate that you guys are focusing on what you're good at. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Merlin, do you have any other questions or thoughts before we get into our favorite question?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm learning a lot, so it's great for me.
Asif, is there anything else you wanted to share about yourself, about Visual SP, before we
sure.
look to wrap things up?
As I mentioned in the beginning, I love connecting with people. I love helping if I can to people. So if somebody wants to connect with me, they can connect with me on LinkedIn. I think the show notes will have my exact name. So if people like, well, how do you spell Asif Rahmani? You can find that out. Let me know. And then if you want to find more information about Visual SP, as I've already shared, just go to visualsp.com. You'll see a lot more information about what I've talked about here.
Awesome. And then at conferences, you'll see Asif at lots of UART Dynamics Con Live with Merlin, and Summit will have happened when this airs, but we'll see each other at Summit. So make sure that you check out sessions if you're going to a conference that Asif's at. So.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Definitely looking forward to seeing you guys there.
Yeah. Merlin, do you want to ask our favorite question?
All right. It's time for the most important question. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. The question, of course, Asif, is what is your favorite hot dish? Which presumes that you already know what a hot dish is. So do you know what a hot dish is?
Well, Dynamics hot dish is definitely my favorite one, but I'm assuming you're talking about the ones that I put in my mouth, right?
Yes, but we're
thinking
like
more
that
of the food-based, but that's a good answer.
Thank you.
Best one so far.
As a family, we really love Thai food. So one of the dishes that we usually get is Penang curry, yellow Penang curry. I don't know if you've ever had that.
I have not.
You should definitely try it.
I don't think I've had a yellow Penang, but...
It's usually Penang curry, but I think sometimes they ask, do you want yellow curry or do you want red curry? So we go with yellow.
Mm.
But it's a very tasty hot dish, in my opinion.
Interesting.
Really, really prefer that. So, yeah, that would be my answer.
Yeah, I can say I have not had a lot of Thai food. So, well, when I say a lot, any. I'm not very adventurous with food. So maybe we'll have to try some at, I don't know if Orlando has good Thai food. But maybe we can find somewhere.
Come to Chicago. That's where I'm based. Chicago has
You are in Chicago. Yeah.
That's right. Lots of the restaurants and all different, you know, cuisines.
That's super close. 90 minutes. I'll be down there for some Thai food.
See you soon.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Asif, for joining us. It was exciting to have you on the show. And make sure you like and subscribe, and then also reach out and connect with Asif and learn more about Visual SP.
Thank you for listening to the Dynamics Hot Dish Podcast. For additional content and previous episodes, check out our website at dynamicshotdish.com, follow us on Twitter at dynamicshotdish, and subscribe to our podcast for notifications. Thanks. See you next time.